Hey, it's Jason from SmilePunk.com. Mike, how are you doing today?
Well, wow. This is CPS Mike, and my co-host here has had probably about, three freaking pots of coffee today?
I had three pots of coffee this morning before I woke up.
Before you woke up?
No. This is probably my,
He's been drinking gasoline since he got up this morning.
Yeah, but this has got to be on my 1, 2, 3, 4. I might be on 10 cups of coffee today.
Jesus Christ. God help us all. If this is any indication, we should get through this one really quick. All right. Well, other than being OD'd on caffeine, how the hell are you doing?
Wonderful. I'm doing pretty good today.
Doing pretty good?
Yeah, I have a date later on.
Boom,
so that's,
chicka, boom, boom.
That's good. I have internet coming to dual homestead this week. Actually, by the time that you guys hear this, we will have electricity is already hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
My tiny house, my shed, will be delivered already.
Not to be confused with the tiny house that you're actually going to be constructing.
Right. Yeah, this will be my temporary home while I build the tiny house. That'll be delivered on this Thursday. And then on Friday, we're sticking around, and I went with Dish, so that'll be a topic we talk about after I get it and give it a try. Mm-hmm. After looking at a lot of providers online,
yeah.
I decided to go with Dish. I'll have Dish TV to watch, and they're gonna give me
DVR.
A DVR with 200 hours of record time. They can record 6 shows simultaneously. So, it'll be like having Netflix and Hulu, kinda, but without having to chew up my data limit.
You should shoot an email to corporate or whatever. Like, if I review your service on my show, will you give me a discount?
They won't. They don't give a crap. But looking at the other people, it comes out to be about the same price I would pay for that speed of internet without having TV.
Really?
Right. It comes to be a couple bucks less.
Oh.
So it's about 20 bucks less to get 20 gigs of internet, and obviously the DirecTV channels and stuff. So I can watch that when I want to watch something without, I could probably allocate it to watch like one Netflix show a week or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could download stuff when I'm out of town.
Right.
So, obviously I'll be uploading the podcast here at your place from now on. So I'll probably be editing them while I'm sitting here.
Ah, gotcha.
And then throw the files up and let them sit on the web servers. And then, because that way I'll eat up my bandwidth otherwise.
Yeah. Well, at least this week you found a way to save money. Meanwhile, I wasted some on a profession that so many people hold so highly.
Hookers?
No, doctors.
Oh, even better.
I had a major pain in my shoulder.
Yeah.
Not actually in the shoulder, right at the edge of my shoulder blade, in the middle of my back. Started on Monday for the damnedest reasons. I was just sitting at my desk doing my work, and it started hurting. Has not stopped hurting since. It's hurting right now as we speak.
Right.
I went after 3 days of this, on Wednesday, I went to the doctor, who took an x-ray and then told me to do the exact same stuff I've already been doing, take the same medication that I'd already been taking for it, and sent me home without even a prescription.
That's why I'm more fond of chiropractors, because they actually treat problems and not treat symptoms.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just going to start stockpiling on medication and stuff like that, painkillers, muscle relaxers, not for drug purposes, but just for, I mean, because I already had, like, back medication that I had not finished off from other instances, and that's what they told me to do, just keep taking that stuff, so screw it. And I'm also, as far as illnesses, viruses, infections, stuff like that go, I'm actually going to start loading up on fish antibiotics.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, because, like we've always said, same stuff that humans get, just packaged differently.
Yeah.
All right, bud. Let's see. Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about how ISIS got arrested at the border. 7 common survival tactics that will get you killed. We're going to be talking a little bit about the benefits of 3D printing. We're going to be reviewing the Exo bars, talking a little bit about paleo and depression, and an article that James was not expecting to go viral, all about pine bark bacon. Yes. Along with our permaculture minute, our wild edible of the week, my paleo report, Mike's worst cases, and let's just get right into it with a few words about our about the good people over at jmbullion.com.
If you're trying to create a monetary hedge for inflation, then I suggest you put some portion of your money in silver. Gold, if you've got it, but silver, definitely. Silver is actually kind of gone cheap right now, so I might have to budget in buying some silver myself. And the best place to do that is jmbullion.com, where you get free shipping and the best prices you can get on silver, along with some really neat silver designs. It shouldn't be a big portion of your decision to buy, but I do. I collect some stuff. So, you know, if you're going to buy silver, get something neat. And they have good designs at the best prices with free shipping. And as always, go click on their banner in the right-hand margin of the SurvivalPunk.com website.
And while you're over in that banner, you might want to find the little spot about WellFoodCo.com. Plus, best place on the internet to get the stuff you need for bugging in and for bugging out. Why don't you tell them a little bit about them?
Created by John Wellborn and his wife, with some help from Rob Wolf. They have great paleo-approved, organic, high-quality snack foods, mostly. So the carne bars, the amazing chocolate bars, grass-fed protein, beef jerky, all that good stuff at wellfoodco.com.
All righty, and now let's move right into our first news story of this week. ISIS apparently got arrested at the border, and what border are we talking about here? And
I believe it is this article comes from theepochtimes.com. And this is ISIS arrested in United States for ISIS members arrested at border as fighters could use Ebola. Sure. ISIS appears to be trying to enter America if it hasn't already. While experts say that the terrorist group could resort to infecting themselves with Ebola virus to try to spread in the United States. Four members of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria were apprehended this week at the Mexican border trying to enter the United States. Judicial Watch, citing Department of Homeland Security sources, said that terrorists were caught in the McAllen and Farr.
The report came after Representative Duncan Hunter, R. Khalif, a former Marine Corps major and member of the House Armed Services Committee, said that at least 10 ISIS fighters have been caught trying to cross the border into Texas. ISIS is coming across the southern border, he told Fox News. They aren't flying B-1 bombers bombing American cities, but they are going to be bombing American cities coming across from Mexico. I know that at least 10 ISIS fighters have been caught coming across the Mexican border in Texas, he added. But while Border Control nabbed the terrorists, you know there's going to be a dozens more that did not get caught by the Border Patrol, he said.
A Department of Homeland Security denied that any people with ties to ISIS were apprehended. Meanwhile, experts say that ISIS may be considering having some members inject themselves with the Ebola virus and then travel to Western communities, including the United States, to spread the disease. Ebola has a transmission period of 2 to 21 days, making a viable option of spreading terror and fear for the group, which is known as ISIL and IS. The individual exposed to the Ebola virus would be the carrier, said Captain Al Shimakis, retired, a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Navy Naval War College. In the context of terrorist activity, it doesn't take much sophistication to go to the next step to use a human being as a carrier.
Shimkus, who teaches a course in chemical and biological warfare, told Forbes the terrorists wouldn't even have to obtain the virus in a laboratory setting. They can simply send members into a region where the virus is spreading, such as parts of Liberia, and intentionally expose themselves to the virus. Then members would travel to target cities to attempt to spread the virus. Amanda Techman authored a paper on the issue in May 2013 edition of the journal Globe Policy. The threat of an Ebola bioterrorist attack in East Africa is a global health and security concern and
should not be ignored. She concluded in the paper, which was titled The Bioterrorist Threat of Ebola in East Africa and Implications for the Global Health and Security. Fears of terrorists using a bioweapon spurred a $5.6 billion project, BioShed, which was authorized by former President George W. Bush in 2004.
I'm done reading this. Vaguely, it looks like ISIS may or may not have been arrested at the border because they're trying to deny that.
Mm-hmm.
Which it makes me think that if ISIS is being captured at the border, where are they really? What's their real objective? If all the eyes are on the Texas border, what are they really trying to do? Are they coming in from Canada? Do they have fake passports and they're just coming in on planes and landing in the major airports? I mean, that seems like the wiser thing to do.
Yeah.
I would send a bunch of idiots through Mexico to get caught.
Misdirection,
yes. And from what I've seen, ISIS tends to be a bit smarter than the average bear here.
Yeah, they're a little bit more savvy than the terrorists that we're used to dealing with. The ones blundering their way through it. I mean,
so if they're getting arrested, I assume that was part of the plan.
It's got to be. I mean, it makes complete sense. I mean, should send all your focus here and they sneak in some other way.
I mean, I saw this infographic on Facebook that estimated that ISIS members on the highest possible end would be 40,000 people or something.
Mm-hmm.
40,000 troops. And let's just say that ISIS managed to arm all 40,000 of them with the best equipment.
Okay.
Doubtful. They're nowhere near as armed as our United States military, but let's just say that they have decent armament. And they decide to come across the Mexican border. There are more than 40,000 armed, trained gun owners in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the border guards.
No, just talking about armed civilians, leaving the military out of this, there are more armed people before they would even get to Austin, Texas, that could plow them down.
Oh, absolutely.
It would be the worst mistake in their career.
Yeah. I mean, virtually everybody in Texas owns a gun. They love
actually,
their guns
actually, look at the statistics. They're not even the highest armed state.
Yeah.
Percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm.
There's a possibility that Tennessee is up there or tied with arms, concealed carry permit holders. And that's the ones that have permits. There's rednecks all over the place that just happen to have guns.
Oh, God, yeah. Guns are easy to get if you know where you're looking.
And, America is a very armed state. So,
yeah.
When I hear about stories like this, first, my thought is that it's misdirection. And second, the first thing that pops in my head is, just two ISIS come at me, bro. If you're dumb enough to come, then do it, and this will be over in no time.
Yeah, but if the stuff about them trying to deliberately infect themselves with Ebola is true, I mean, yeah, you can fight a guy, but you can't really fight a germ that easily. I mean, their dead bodies could still spread the disease.
The CDC is pretty decent at that. Which, there are some crazy conspiracies go around the internet right now. I was on one website, and there's this field in Atlanta outside the CDC, not connected to it. They rented the land from a landowner, and they stored hermetically sealed coffins for in case of, viral outbreak, epidemic. And they're like, see, it's the plan. The CDC wants to kill you all.
Oh,
it's like, you're an idiot. If I was running a competent government, which our government is not competent, but if I was, I would have things in place like a hermetically sealed coffin. If we do, and we're pretty much ripe in history for a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
The last big one we had really was the 1912 Spanish flu.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, that's more than 100 years, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
So I would say we're about on par to have one soon.
Not he's not saying that we want one, but
no, I'm just saying, like, you know,
we're on borrowed time at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's bound to happen. Well, I think I heard recently that there was a bubonic plague outbreak in San Francisco in like the 1900s or 1800s or something. Small and contained. But back to the point, having hermetically sealed coffins probably is a good idea. And I think the CDC, for the most part, could probably deal with something like Ebola, which I'm not terribly frightened about.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's all I've got to say on it.
Excellent.
Before we make this the Ebola episode, because I'm trying not to.
Yeah, I mean, but Ebola is something that does keep popping up in our show as well as all over the place. I mean, it is something that needs to be taken care of. But all right, moving on to our next news story. This actually comes from Cracked.com, one of my favorite websites. 7 common survival tactics that will get you killed. Now, these are 7 things that you've probably been taught your whole damn life. If you're in this situation, do this, and guess what? You have another think coming. All right, number 7, in case of a shark, punch it in the nose. Now, for whatever reason, plane crash, riptide, sailing misadventure, bad case of ocean fury, you find yourself in the middle of the sea with nothing but miles of water around you, and to your horror, here comes the heavy string music and a circling fin slicing through the water. Luckily, from multiple websites and news stories about shark survival, you remember the shark's Achilles heel. Punches to the face, specifically the tender nose area. You wind up to belt that fishy bastard in the schnoz and make your testicles proud. The result? First, let's look at a shark. Can you find his nose? Yeah, it's that incredibly narrow point in front that drops precipitously into a slimy downward sloping ramp right at his 5-million-toothed mouth. Take into account the fact that you're bobbing around in the water like a buoy full of meat, facing off against the lightning-quick predator with 7 million years of practice and eating things that punch it in the nose, and you'll see the chances are your fist will deflect down into that aforementioned gaping hole of teeth like Boba Fett into a Sarlacc pit. Now, if your plan to defeat the shark is to feed yourself to him until he grows tired of tasting you, you're off to a great start. But experts say that even if you hit the shark-punching lottery, you won't have scared him off. You just dazed him, giving him a minute or so tops. Now, if this particular shark is suffering from ADD, then great. You're in the clear now. He's off to chase shiny things or update his Twitter feed at 82 times an hour. But if not, all you've done is managed to piss the shark off and give him a minute to ponder how revenge is a dish best served blood-filled bag resembling you. Number 6, in case of an earthquake, get in the doorway. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're sleeping off a bender that would wound the pride of Bukowski. Suddenly you wake with a start when the house begins to rumble. Your pants feel moist and warm with urine, though you can't remember if you peed yourself before or after the earthquake began. No time to ponder urine-based philosophical questions, man. You need to survive. You scramble to the nearest doorway, congratulating yourself both on the level of headedness and in a stressful situation, as well as the foresight to pass out so close to a doorway. The result? It's true. Doorways can be lifesavers in an earthquake. If you own a 150-year-old adobe home, you don't. You live in a late-model cookie-cutter bungalow. Oh, too no. bad. Had you possessed more discerning taste, you wouldn't be sucking on hellfire now, Sparky. Because of the particular construction style of old adobe homes, the doorway is substantially stronger. This fact became apparent when locals noticed the only thing left standing in the rubble of these buildings after an earthquake was the doorways. In any other homes, you may as well be standing beneath an anvil with a coyote cutting the rope. Most doorways are just as weak, if not more so, than any other point in the house. Number 5. In case of lightning, lie down flat on the ground. It's a beautiful and serene day in the Pacific Northwest, which of course means it's pissing down freezing cold rain, the kind with those fat droplets that hit you like a personal insult. And oh, did you hear that? Thunder. Awesome. Seeing no immediate shelter, you lay down as flat as you can, knowing this makes you less likely for a target. You close your eyes and think of California. The result? Despite the sound of it, when lightning strikes the ground, it isn't actually grounded. You win again, words. Rather, lightning that strikes the earth radiates in circles from the point of impact. Uh, By lying down, you offer those lightning ripples the maximum amount of contact with your body, which leads to burned internal organs and cardiac arrest. What you should do is run for lower ground, like your ass is on fire, which it may soon be, and then scrunch into a tiny ball with just your feet touching the ground. The running improves your chances because lightning has trouble hitting a moving target. Even that bitch Mother Nature has to aim. Number 4, in case of a snake bite, suck out the poison. Ah, nature. The earthly vistas, the painterly landscapes, and the chirping of the birds, and the snakes biting your groin. Oh, that last one's not so good. That looks to be a pretty vicious snake bite, in fact. Not willing to die stupidly like an animal in the forest, you prefer to do your dying smartly in the city like Oscar Wilde, you point to the wound in your intimate place and ask your friend politely to suck it out. You somehow manage to refrain from appending the words hard or whore to that statement, so your friend obliges. The result? If your hiking buddy happens to have any kind of open sore in or around his mouth, he too will get a nice dose of poison, and the two of you can then die together, just like a frightened, gay, boot-wearing Romeo and Juliet. If your friend doesn't have a bunch of open sores, and really, you probably shouldn't be running around the woods with people who have frequent open-mouth sores, and if he doesn't accidentally swallow some venom, he might take a little poison away from you, but he'll be giving it back a lot more in the form of bacteria. The inside of your mouth is hands down the dirtiest part of your body. To sidestep all the unpleasantness, you could instead keep calm. A speeding heart rate speeds the venom through your body. Use a suction device if one is handy. What you and your buddy are doing in the forest with an unexplained suction device is between you. See if the wound discolors and or swells. That's your sign the snake is venomous. Get medical help and take the snake with you. The genus of snake informs doctors which antivenom to use. Don't risk your life to capture the snake, though. A snake can still bite an hour after its death. Damn, snakes are assholes. All right, number 3. Come on, change pages. All right, number 3. When dying of thirst, eat snow. It's the first snowfall. You throw on your polar bear jammies, grab your mittens, and bound outside. You innocently frolic and skip your way through the winter wonderland, hurling snowballs at imaginary foes and generally cavorting with reckless abandon of Disney characters. But when your endorphins wear off, you look up and see nothing but an army of identical snow-covered trees. You're lost. Stranded. Your childlike joy has likely doomed you again. You're going to need shelter, food, and water soon. But wait a second. You're surrounded by snow in a convenient powdered form. Well, shove it in, big guy. The result? If your goal is to preserve your frozen corpse, packing it with snow is a terrific idea. Yeah, the snow will turn to liquid when you eat it, but mostly it'll rob your body of precious heat. Instead, stuff the snow in a container and put it in between layers of your clothes, not directly against your skin, so your radiant body heat might melt it without directly leaching the heat from you. Also, be at least a little discerning about the snow you consume in the woods. That's where the Pope shits. Wait, what? Was that right? We forgot how the joke goes. All right, number 2. When stranded at sea, drink your own pee. If the visionary film Waterworld taught us anything, it said it's totally okay to drink your own pee. So when the bombs start to fall, you don't need to worry about irradiated water supplies. You know to just lean back with a lovely pee cocktail in hand and let out a sigh of satisfaction, for you've beaten the end of days.
Oh, it's getting dark. I better drink my own pee.
The result? By dying. Funny thing about urine, your body doesn't want it. That's why your body politely asks to leave it in the first place. More specifically, it's the salt in your pee your body needs out. Salt dehydrates the body, and by introducing more of it in recycling your urine, you'll dry up faster than Kevin Costner's career. Instead of squeezing juice out of your salty udder, maybe you should hit up that glowing pond after all. Sure, you'll die that way too, but at least it's dignified. Nobody will drink too much of his own piss on your tombstone. Ad number 1, when lost in the desert, get water from a cactus. Jesus, according to the title, you're lost in the desert now. What is it with you and traversing into the wild without supplies? Did you feel bloated before taking that treacherous nature hike? Seriously, bottled water equals not expensive. Fine. Let's see if we can keep you calm and from killing yourself again. Well, didn't you once hear that you can get water from a cactus? Let's try that. The result? You lop off the top of the nearest cactus, find not aqua, but mushy green innards. Well, that's gross, but that's just like nature, isn't it? Always fucking with you when you're already properly fucked. Ah, well, you must be able to squeeze some liquid out of that, right? So you do, gratefully downing the putrid life-saving fluid, and that's when the vomiting and diarrhea begin. See, the alkaloid-rich mash inside a cactus only makes you sick, thus dehydrating you even faster. If you really need water, you could consider constructing a solar still like the one shown here.
Bullshit.
Which collects water using controlled evaporation and the sun to pull moisture from the ground and, oh hell, who are you kidding? You're wandering off into the snow, getting in fist fights with sharks, and we actually had to convince you not to drink your own piss up there. You're dead and a half by now. The best you can hope to do is leave a hilarious corpse. Try to die giving the double bird. Archaeologists will find your corpse in the future and will probably get a laugh out of that.
You know what?
Come on.
Probably too cold now. As I say, we need to, on an episode of the forthcoming Keep Mike Alive YouTube series, I want you to dig a solar steel. In which case, you will dig a hole in the ground for 12 hours, expending millions of calories to get a thimble of water. It's a good trade, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
especially when you're already in the desert and already dehydrated.
Yes. I want to put it to the test, but from everything I've seen from actual survivalists that have done a solar steal, you spend a lot of time digging a hole to get a thimble of water.
Mm. Any other disagreements you have with that article?
Most of them seem pretty legit. I was going to say that I believe the toxin in the cactus goo is oxalic acid, which is a poison and is not good for you.
What about the drinking your own pee? Bear Grylls seems to think that's okay. I've even seen Mike Hawk do it.
It's not terrible. You can drink. If you said that, you know. Hold on. If you said you were going to drink your pee once, I wouldn't too much have issue with it.
But going through your system that second time.
You do not want to drink two times through pee.
Yeah, that's what even Mike Hawk said.
So yeah.
The first time through, it's survivable. And I actually have a caveat about eating the snow that I saw Les Stroud explain.
Right.
Eating snow, when you're dehydrating, it depends on what time of the day and what you're doing. If you've still got a long day of work ahead of you, building shelter and all that, and you're going to be exerting a lot of stuff, or hiking. Or you just got to keep going. It's okay at that point to eat the snow because you're still going to be working and keeping up your body temperature. If it's toward the end of the day and you're not going to be doing much, eating snow is a death trap because it's only like 10% water and 90% air is basically what it is. What you want to do is get ice. That's the other way around. That's 90% water and about 10% air. But you still want to melt it first. Chewing on ice is also going to lower your core temperature, possibly give you hypothermia.
See. And this is where I disagree with Les. I do think that it won't have a huge impact on you, possibly. But why take that risk when you can just throw it in your bottle and then put it underneath your clothes?
Well, what I'd seen them do is pack a canteen full of snow or what have you, whatever contain, and eat in very small amounts as he goes. That's what I've seen him do. Eating enough for that moment.
I'd rather just melt it under my clothes and keep going. I'd rather not eat it.
Yeah. That's one of those things up for debate. But anyway.
But it's snow. You could melt a lot of snow to drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's
just the waiting for it to melt, I think.
Yeah.
It's a matter of patience.
Well, and a lot of things with these survival shows is they put you under unrealistic circumstances. Well, most people.
Well, I didn't see most of his circumstances being unrealistic.
Well, my thing is, a lot of the circumstances, they try to say that you basically have no gear, and you got to find everything.
Mm-hmm.
I usually don't go into the woods with no gear.
Right. Well, like on Survivor Man, the situations he tries to put it in, it's an unexperienced person doing something that they think is fun and realizing, oh, it's great, I'm screwed now.
Oh. Well, you noobs need to stay out of our woods.
Exactly. All right, now it's time for our main topic of the day. You wanted to talk a bit about 3D printing. And I think I know why.
We had a... I was talking to you the other day, and you had just watched a documentary on 3D printing.
Yep.
I don't know if you knew at the time, but 3D printing is one of the things that I'm fairly passionate about, and I've followed for probably the past... God, I think I was about 14 or so.
I was actually going to suggest, once I get income tax refund and everything, if you might want to go into halvesies in on an inexpensive 3D printer.
Possibly, yes. Possibly. We'll talk about that off air for sure. Interestingly enough, you know what introduced me to 3D printer?
What's that?
An actor that you love.
Kevin Smith?
Alan Alda.
Oh, Alan Alda. How did Alan Alda introduce you to 3D printing?
Alan Alda used to have a show on PBS about science.
I remember that show.
Right.
I remember seeing him standing on the side of a volcano discussing volcanic rock.
I grew up watching that show.
I can't think of the name of it to save my life right now, though, but I know the show you're talking about.
American Science, American something like that. Anyway.
I don't know. Just if you know what the name of the show is, just leave it in our comment section.
SorrelPunk.com. Episode 30.
Are we at 33? We're at 33.
Good I meant to do something on the number, actually.
Oh, yeah, 33. Yeah, yeah. Because last time it was, last episode, it was your age. You right. commented on that.
Right.
Now we're working our way toward my age.
Yes. So, yeah, on that episode, he went and visited a college, Stanford, MIT, one of the big ones. And they were talking, the whole episode was all about 3D printers. You know, at the time, my 13, 14-year-old mind, this was magic.
Oh, God, yeah. To my 35-year-old mind, this is still magic.
Yes.
It's like, for me, it's like the first, very first step towards Star Trek's replicators.
Right. The technology has moved along a lot since then. This
oh, God,
was giant,
yeah.
warehouse-sized, college-only. Mm-hmm. You know, now, you know, it's everywhere. And
you can actually now get one about the size of a microwave for a desktop.
A rep wrap. It's made by the Maker people, actually.
The MakerBot?
RepRap. Oh, well, yeah, it's RepRap came out of Maker. MakerBot, I think, is another spinoff. So, and RepRap is humanity's first general-purpose, self-replicating manufacturing device.
Self-replicating, that means it makes parts to make other ones?
It can, yes. Which is the hurdle that they tried to get by for years. The hurdle was, if a 3D printer can print a 3D printer... It unlocks doors there. That's
also the first step toward the singularity. Yeah. That is a machine that reproduces.
Yeah. So, it's scary, but awesome at the same time. So, at that point, you can... It's... So, to me, to sum it up, the 3D printer is a whole new level and expression of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You're taking complicated manufacturings away from the hands of, you know, big corporations and government, and you're giving it to the people.
Yeah, the ability to make whatever you want. And I mean,
that includes weapons, downloadable CAD files for weapons, AR-15s, that you can print right. out of, you know, plastic
what
or...
What do they call that bottom part of the AR-15? The lower. The lower receiver. Yeah, the lower receiver. I've seen videos... where they've replicated the lower receiver and attached it to an AR-15, then made clips for the AR-15.
My co-host did mean magazines for the AR-15.
Yeah, magazines, clips, whatever. I'm not a gun enthusiast.
We just had that's going to be 1,000 comments right there.
If you don't like it, comment on the website, survivalpunk.com, episode 33. Mike calls him a magazine a clip. Yeah.
We'll write that in the show notes.
Yeah. Hashtag... Mike doesn't know what he's talking about on our Twitter, okay? Whoop-de-damn-doo. Any frickin' way. But the thing that I saw that I thought was insane, this guy that was featured on the documentary, and I'm sure a lot of people who know anything about 3D printing, and even probably survival has probably heard of this guy, he created a fully printable 3D pistol.
Yes.
A handgun. Fully printable. That works. It's called the Liberator.
And I think the ATF is trying to shut him down
hard. He was forced legally to remove those downloadable files.
Yeah. Which I'm sure if you look, not even that hard, You can find them on the internet.
You can
You can't stop information anymore.
No, you can't. Once it's up there, it's there. You just got to know where to look for it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, fully printable. I mean, it only held one round, but that was then. That, I mean, that documentary I watched was a year or two old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just the same, I mean, good God, a gun that did not exist before you entered a program into your printer.
Yes. I mean, like I said, it does, it's freedom. Instead of spending, you know, hundreds of dollars on something, you can just click print.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to get the raw materials. It's not free. You know, it's not Star Trek replicator technology yet. You still need to get the raw components. But raw components are cheap.
I actually have some mixed feelings about the 3D printable gun. I mean, which is part of the whole big debate and conspiracy about it. I mean, you don't want, like, criminals and terrorists and crap like that to just be able to print their own damn weapons. Weapons that I might add wouldn't even show up on a metal wouldn't even ding if you go through an airport metal detector. Because they're made of plastic.
I mean, if they wanted to that hard, there's other easier ways of doing the same thing.
Yeah, you can make guns out of wood if you wanted to.
Go on YouTube. There's a ton of people that make their own guns out of, like, off-the-shelf stuff from, like, Lowe's and Home Depot.
A while back, I actually saw this guy did an article for some magazine. He proved that you can make a working firearm out of stuff that you could buy in the duty-free shops and other stores once you get past airport security. He got through the metal detectors, got through airport security to where all the stores were, and went and bought this, made a fully functional weapon out of it. So if you wanted to, and you got the ingenuity, I mean, that's just one more outlet. I mean, and they're trying to ban the 3D printable guns.
Which I think is retarded. I hate any law that prevents you from doing something that's not a crime. I should be able to print machine guns all day long if I wanted to. If I kill someone with that machine gun, that's a crime. I should be punished.
Yeah.
If I do nothing with it, that's not a crime. I didn't harm anyone. I didn't take from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I did nothing. So
exactly.
I have no problems. I should be able to print fully automatic machine guns until the damn cows come home. And it not be a problem.
See, well, I personally believe this. It should be perfectly legal, perfectly fine to print your own gun off a 3D printer. I think, though, that they should put the one caveat on it that you would have to, enter in, like, your permit information or whatever. Your permit for carrying weapons and shit like that. I think if you have that and your cinema scan, whatever, I think that should be fine.
I just think that if you do a crime with it, then that's a crime. But the right to keep and bear arms is a right given by your creator. It doesn't matter. The government doesn't need a permit. It's not their damn business.
I just wish, back when they drafted that document, I wish that they had been a hell of a lot more clear on what they meant by the right to bear arms, because that has been a point of contention ever frickin' since.
There's no way they could have known all-encompassing. In lawyer legal speak, the word usage shall not is pretty much you can't misinterpret it.
Right.
And the government is infringing. Shall not infringe, they are. So that's, but we're getting off topic. and you took me down an angry path.
Anyway, what else did you want to say about 3D printers?
Besides just the ability to make guns, just the another aspect of it, it opens up the small business entrepreneurship to a whole new level.
Mm-hmm.
You can design a new product and prototype it and knock it out and have it ready for, like, you know, display, you know, in hours or days.
Absolutely.
I mean, instead of, like, having to, and that's a downside for, you know, being an inventor. Like, if you had the ability to create what you wanted and then have a, you know, printer spit it out, and then you could say, well, now I have this, I can try to market it. And that, because I caught the entrepreneurship bug, and I kind of always had it. I've kind of always had these money-making schemes. I'm sure you remember some of them. When I had that car wash in Clarksville, I used to undercut the owner of the store. His drinks were too high. So what I did was I went to Sam's Club, and I bought the multi-giant packs of Gatorade, and I'd resell them for a buck a piece,
yeah.
Which made me a couple bucks of profit. Not much, really.
Right.
But they got – my employees got drinks at a lower price. I did not charge them tax. and I kept the profit myself, and I was able to keep going like this. So yeah, I've always had these sort of like little money-making schemes, you know, little business ideas.
It all stems back to the fact that at one point you wanted to take over the world.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you were going to bring up when I was a preteen, and I put up flyers around town that I would look for missing animals and call myself pet detective.
You never told me about that.
I think I did.
No, I'm pretty sure you didn't.
So yeah, I mean,
that has nothing to do with 3D printers.
Yeah. I mean, if, and 3D printers are getting more versatile in the materials they can print with. So the ability to like market any product of anything. So you claim that years ago you came up with the Snuggie, the Slinkit.
Don't claim it, I did.
But you don't have a product. With this, if it prints in textiles, you could have printed a Snuggie and had your product. And then you could have tried to market and sell it.
I was never going to call it a Snuggie.
What were you going to name it?
What? The sleeve sheet.
The sleeve sheet, okay.
I was going to go simple with it. I wanted something people would understand. I didn't want people to have to ask, what's a Snuggie?
What? And on the flip side, though, no idea is original. I bet if you had it, that guy had it, and probably 5,000 other people had the same idea.
Well, whatever.
But that guy marketed it.
Yeah, I know.
So with a 3D printer...
Everybody I asked about it, they all said, well, that's a stupid idea. Who the hell would buy a blanket with sleeves?
Well, people do. This is...
So I gave up on it. Never give up on your dreams.
Who would listen to a podcast with two ass clowns in it? Thanks, all few hundred of you guys. We appreciate it.
I can't believe you just said that about our listeners. And you called me an ass clown.
I called myself an ass clown, too. I'm dangerously close to taking this down the entrepreneurship path. Because someone wrote on my Facebook page earlier, I'm trying to slow myself down, guys.
Too much coffee.
I have had too much coffee. I've been drinking it. So Mai Tai Coffee, our new sponsor, sent me out 7 pounds of coffee.
And he drunk it all today.
I drank a couple cups today.
A couple, my ass. You've drunk a couple of cups since we've been sitting here.
I've drank a couple pots of coffee, right. I've drank a couple pots of coffee. I put up a status earlier on my Survival Punk Facebook page, facebook.com/survivalpunk. And, I was talking about the coffee I was drinking, and the guy was like, I wish I could have some coffee to review. I love coffee. I drink it every day or something like that. And I was like, why don't you review coffee? I mean, there's only like a few thousand or so, maybe 200,000 people or so that are into survivalism, 300,000 possibly. How many people drink coffee? Millions!
Possibly billions.
If you started a blog or YouTube channel or both on coffee and reviewed different coffees and did videos and reviewed them, in no time, you would have tons of fans.
You'd never have to pay for coffee.
Yeah. You just get all your coffee for free.
Hey, think about this. Virtually every culture on Earth has their own coffee.
Yes. You could ask. You could have different coffees from different companies all the time, and you could make a decent living. What you love. I mean, who doesn't love coffee? And that doesn't just apply for that. Everything. I'm trying, and I think it's working. I think CPS Mike here has the bug.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna be launching his own side project here soon.
I'll go ahead and tell him about it right now.
Don't mention the domain name.
I'm not mentioning the domain name. Oh God, no.
It'll be snatched up.
I know it will, but. As you've already probably guessed, I'm going to be launching my own website. It's pretty much about me and the stuff that I like to do. There's going to be Rubik's Cubing and retro gaming. There's going to be some survival stuff, and I'm also looking for sponsors out there. So contact me at james@survivalpunk.com.
You need your own email address.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have one from my from the other podcast that we did. Contact me at acehole3742@gmail.com. That's acehole3742@gmail.com.
I'll get that from you. No, I won't put in the show notes. You'll get spam. So yeah, I mean, for entrepreneurship ideas, it's huge. Just, I mean, for, and then just think about just printing the little cheap junk instead of buying it from China. You need a new spatula. Go print one.
You lost the back off your remote. Go print one.
You need a new skillet. Print one. They'll print everything.
See, and you're actually going down a path right now that I wanted to bring up. I've seen some of these high-end 3D printers, and I was telling you about this. Man brought a big frickin' industrial, one of those big crescent wrenches in. Just, you know, as part of the whole thing. They printed an exact replica of it, fully assembled with moving parts, fully functional out of titanium.
Yes.
Reprintable tools. You got one tool, but you got 10 people that need to do the same job, print 9 more of them. I mean, the thing was fully functional. Came straight out of the printer like that.
Yes.
Albeit that was a high-end model. I mean, probably cost $100,000 with the machine, and it was the size of 2 refrigerators next to each other, but damn! It printed in titanium, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
A very durable, lightweight metal that they use on the space shuttle.
Yes. And a smaller scale is, I saw someone print in liquid chocolate a Han Solo and carbonite chocolate bar.
Printing in chocolate.
Yes, printing.
Where the hell was this before I went paleo?
I know. So, yeah, they're printing with, like, composite metals. Obviously, they're printing with titanium. It'll get to the point where they're printing with single atoms of materials and stacking them like carbon tubes. They'll stack them.
And then we truly have a replicator.
It's, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's pretty close there.
That would be the prototype for replicator right there. If you could actually break it down to the single atoms and molecules, you could print anything at that point.
Yeah, you could. So,
not to mention my pothead friends out there, there's plenty of programs for custom bongs on those. Just saying, for all of our fans in Colorado and Washington.
Well, there's no reason why you couldn't replicate marijuana.
Well,
the chemical compounds.
Down the line, but right now you can't
print marijuana. Right now, correct, yeah. I'm talking to the teacher, yeah.
Imagine if there's some scientist in Colorado now working on a 3D printer that prints in marijuana, prints in THC.
Buy the chemical, you should be able to. I mean, it would be a synthetic version, but yeah. There's almost no limit to the potential of a 3D printer.
Well, okay, right now, you have a 3D printer, okay? This is just a hypothetical. You have a 3D printer right now sitting in front of you. What would you want to print? Just
a knife.
You'd want to print a knife right now.
First thing I popped about, yeah, I'd print a knife.
Print a knife, yeah. I mean, even a plastic knife can still go stabby on somebody.
You just said they can print in titanium.
I'm talking about like a desktop 3D printer. But whatever, I mean, you could print a knife. You could print a titanium knife. I mean, they have titanium knives. You could print one. Hell, you could print 100 of them.
Yeah.
Me, the first thing that pops into my head, custom chess sets and my own Rubik's Cubes.
Yeah.
But you can do that.
So it's kind of a weird topic.
Especially for a survival show.
For a survival show, but
it has great survival implications.
Yeah. I mean, and I know a lot of you guys are sort of nerding out about this stuff, too. Think about from a self-sufficient standpoint, be able to stockpile sort of your components, your liquid plastics, your hard metals and stuff, and be able to print what you need on demand.
And think about this. You can print containers. You can print plates. You can print bowls. You can print anything for cooking that you need. Those would be great in a survival situation.
And on a lot of that stuff, you can recycle the raw materials back to reprint stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so from a self-sufficient and survival standpoint, 3D printers are amazing. They're sort of right now on the cusp. They're going to break through to the wide market. This right now on 3D printers, it's a mixture of being excited about the topic and the several cups of coffee that I drank. It's right now it's like 1990 for the computers or something. Like it's It's that, you know, 1990 or 1987, 1988 or so.
What the hell are you talking about?
Computers were pretty rare. Like, in you know, the late 1980s, early 1990s, it was like, oh, I know a guy that has a computer.
Right.
You know, now it's like, there's multiple computers in every household. The world is connected to everything now. So that's the way I see 3D printers being. Right now, you know that one nerd that has a 3D printer, that you know, a tiny desktop model they play with, or you can build 3D printers out of like broken printer parts. The mechanisms go back and forth. You can
There's basically two kinds of printers. They're the ones that do it with one. There's one kind that does it with like lasers, and then one kind that does it with like molten whatever.
That would be like a milling machine,
right?
Yeah, you can. They're CNC machines, which are basically little spinning like wood routers that will mill out stuff in all kinds of different. Like you can mill out wood, you can mill out plastic. I've got this little. It's an Aztec calendar milled. No, they use a laser printer on this one. They laser print it out on a piece of wood, so the laser would burn the design of the Aztec calendar like tiny. I went to actually Maker Faire, so I saw some like Maker Bots and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome! When did you do that?
A couple years ago, when I went to Texas, remember that?
Oh crap! I didn't know.
Life-size mousetrap game.
Oh yeah, I remember you telling me about that. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah,
sounds pretty awesome actually. No, I mean so far, and I did a little bit of looking. I didn't do a whole hell of a lot of looking, but the cheapest 3D printer I've seen so far, a desktop one, was retailed at like $599. But I mean $600. I mean that's less than. I mean. That's a paycheck for some people. I mean, income tax refund time's coming up in, you know, just a handful of months. I mean, that's not, I'm sure a lot of people spent more than that on their damn iPhones or on their damn laptops or anything like that. So it's not beyond reach.
And speaking of I pulled up this one article that I wanted to sort of like look through real quick. One of what I feel to be the greatest helps is they can 3D print prosthetic pieces now.
I was about to bring that up, dude.
For fractions, like what, hand, you know, made by manufacturing, they're like what, hundreds of thousands, or tens of thousands of dollars?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3D print one. Bam, here you go. You know, little girl, here's your new arm.
Exactly. I mean, I've seen that. Like, a MakerBot sponsored this whole RoboHand thing. For kids that have lost hands and fingers and stuff in accidents, or were even born without it, fully functional, articulating prosthetic hands. They can do the same with legs. I mean, it's just, I mean, the implications of what is possible with 3D printers, I mean, it's damn near limitless.
So, on this, I'm not even going through the whole article, there's a bunch of stuff on here, but 3D printed fabrics is a reality. So you could have printed out your sleeved sheet.
That is just remarkable. I mean, think about it. That's printing your own clothing right there.
3D printed bikinis, yeah.
I mean, good God. See, and that is beyond even what I thought. I didn't even know about fabrics. But that is remarkable.
Instead of going out and buying a cell phone case, print a new one.
Did it show shoes on there, for God's sake?
3D printed shoes, yeah.
3D printed electric light shoes. It's just amazing. And it's getting better all the time. I mean, because they keep finding ways to make these damn things better. I mean, and the better they get, the more, I mean, they've been getting cheaper. I mean, it used to be you wouldn't be able to find any kind of 3D printer for under $50,000.
Yeah.
And now you can literally buy one for under $1,000. That is insane. Yeah.
The RepRap was open source. You can build one. You use the plans and stuff. So I'll have a couple of links in the show notes for you to check out. Little girl's arm, yeah. That's good. So we're gonna wrap up because I could talk about 3D printers all day and 2 days and 3 days. What do we got next?
All right, next. Now, if you do have a 3D printer and you want to print some stuff, just don't. I would wait before you do that because I would see what they're selling over at CampingSurvival.com first.
Camping Survival, definitely. You mentioned earlier about stocking up on some fish antibiotics, which There's definitely a place in your quest for fish antibiotics, and from CatholicSurvival.com, you can get them free shipping.
Best prices
I've seen on the internet, and free shipping.
Mm-hmm.
It's a double whammy.
Oh, absolutely.
On top of that, get all the other equipment and items that you need to bug out or bug in, as my friend CPS Mike likes to say.
Yeah, get your bug out bags there. Just find the banner on the right-hand side of SurvivalPunk.com. Click on it and get prepared. Oh, and now it's time for one of our affiliate ads for this month. All right. If you're having problems with your desktops, laptops, tablets, cell phones, and gaming consoles, need them repaired or refurbished, go to Area 51 Tech Solutions. You want to speak with my good buddy Jason Han over there. Just mention CPS Mike at SurvivalPunk.com and get 10% off any repairs or orders you got. That's Area 51 Tech Solutions. The phone number is 615-379-8113. Call them for a free consultation. That's Area, or email him at Area51TechSolutions@gmail.com. We believe in serving our community with integrity. All right, now it's time for Gadget Punk. What is the gadget or item that we're reviewing this week, mon ami?
I got a special shipment in from the great folks at Exo Protein Bars. Exo does something special with their protein bars that no one else does.
Does it have anything to do with where they're getting their protein?
They make it out of cricket flour.
Cricket flour.
They make flour out of crickets.
Yeah, cricket
meaning that the Exo protein bars are gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, grain-free. They're sort of a, I want to say perfect, they are perfect paleo bar.
They're not cricket-free, though.
They are cricket. I mean, so it's a good bit of protein from the cricket flour. Looking at this blueberry one here that we did not try, blueberry vanilla, 260 calories, 150 of fat, so not terrible on the fat. I like my fat to be up there. Cholesterol 10 grams, sodium 35, carbs 23, dietary fiber 6, so you subtract 6 from the 23, boom, 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 10 grams of protein. So a little low on the protein side, but darn tasty, I would say.
Yeah, I did try one myself. It was my first experience delving into eating insects.
I duped him into trying it. He started eating it, and he was like,
no, you didn't dupe me. You told me about it the day before.
I forgot.
I just completely slipped my mind that that's what you were talking about. I remembered, though, while I was still chewing, and I did not spit it out, right. You freaked my daughter out, damn it.
That was so good.
You scared her and made her sad.
That was funny.
You grossed her out hardcore.
I was like, hey, Mike's daughter, would you like to try a piece of candy bar? She was like, well, yes, Uncle James. She's like, it looks like a brownie. I'm like, yeah, it's a brownie. So she eats it, and she's like, oh, this isn't bad. You know, she eats it. She doesn't eat the whole piece. It's a pretty big piece of, I mean, you know, I split it into digital parts. And so she was eating it, and she seemed to enjoy it. It was sour apple, green apple, something like that?
Apple cinnamon.
Very tasty. I thought it tasted like a Fig Newton inside, actually.
Yeah, it didn't taste bad.
No, it tasted good. And after she finished her piece is when I decided to tell her, oh, and I forced your wife to try a piece, too.
Yeah, she knew.
I could not trick your son into trying it. He wasn't interested in it.
Yeah.
But your wife did not really want to try it.
But she tried it.
And the look on your daughter's face when I said, hey, that was made of crickets. She was like, crickets. The shock and the horror on her face.
I had to spend the next 15 minutes trying to convince her that Uncle James was lying.
Yes. And I wouldn't
lie.
I
finally convinced her. I'm like, he's just joking, honey. You didn't really eat crickets. Because I have to live with her, you bastard.
Yeah. Crickets. Yum.
But
so
anyway,
I did enjoy it.
Enjoy it. How much protein's in one of those bars?
10 grams.
10 grams?
Yeah.
How big's the bar? What does it say on there? I mean, the package says what now?
It is 2.1 ounces.
2.1 ounces?
60
grams. So 10
grams
of protein for 2.1 ounces. That ain't bad. That ain't bad at all.
Personally, I would prefer more protein. But 10 grams, I mean...
You just want to open up a bar and there'd be a steak in there.
You have no idea. There are some meat options, but, I mean, what an innovative idea, too, though. Cricket flour. Yeah,
it's grinding up crickets to make flour with.
I think crickets are, not crickets, but I think insects are gonna sort of turn some of their taboo that they have here in the States around. People are gonna start eating more insects like they do in the other parts of the world.
It's gonna be a tough, they've got a tough road to hoe. With the crickets.
But, I mean, the younger generation, sort of more...
more experimental?
More experimental, yeah. Because, I mean...
Except my daughter.
I wrote an entire article on eating insects. And I have eaten a fair amount of insects.
Yeah, I know.
So, I was
it a grasshopper or a moth?
It was a grasshopper.
It was a grasshopper that invaded your apartment?
Yeah, yeah. And I ate a moth, too. But when we had the... was it locusts that what we have here? Cicadas. I wanted to barbecue cicadas. I know a couple of the restaurants in Nashville were doing that.
Oh, my God.
I would have ate the heck out of them. So that's it. Yeah. Exo protein bars, good stuff.
Where can they find Exo bars?
I will have a link in the show notes, but I think if you go to... I'm not sure if they have exo.com. That's a short... Maybe not.
All right. Well, anyway, you can find it in the show notes. And now, our friends out there, it is time for the Permaculture Minute. Let's see. I think. Am I starting at the wrong end again?
If you've read all of them, then go to the other side.
Have we already done Wolfati?
Yes. We did it last week, I think.
I put that on the wrong side then. All right. This week's this week's Permaculture Playing Card by Paul Wheaton's Permaculture Playing Cards deck is the Four of Spades, Wildcrafting. Boy, wildcrafting is the harvesting of wild food and medicine and medicinals. Free food available nearly everywhere. There are a lot of foods that cannot be domesticated, so the only way to enjoy them is through wildcrafting, like Montana huckleberries. Wild foods tend to grow in polyculture without irrigation, so they also tend to have more flavor and nutrition. A good wildcrafter will harvest just enough so there'll be even more next year. All right, that was the Four of Spades. And let's see here. Yeah, I got ahead. So we did the Permaculture Minute a little bit early, and now it's before we get into the rest of that stuff, it's time to move on into Nutrition Punk. And this week, first off, I want to start by talking about the article that you threw up that went viral.
Yeah, so while out at Dual Homestead doing the electricity, we had a pine tree that we had fell to make room for the electric pole there. And we were debarking it to use it for some lumber and stuff. While debarking it, I remember an article that I read recently. So I peeled the cambium off the back side of the bark.
Now, to those that are not in the know, what is the cambium?
So when you have a tree, there's the outer bark layer.
That's the part you see.
Yeah, on the back side of that, stuck to it, there's a thin membrane of material before you get to the tree itself, where the rings and stuff are at.
And that's the cambium layer.
Yes, that's the cambium. So I separated it from a piece of bark and then took it home with me. And I cut it into strips and then fried it in bacon fat and then sprinkled it with salt afterwards. It's called pine bark bacon. It is a lot of nutritional value, mostly fiber. It is not, I thought it would be stringy and nasty. And it was actually really brittle and crispy like bacon.
Mm-hmm.
So I ate it. It was salty, had a little smoky flavor, had a sweet sort of pine flavor, mm-hmm. Not overpowering like pine sol, but there was like the hint of pine in it and sort of a sweetness from the sap.
Okay.
So sort of almost kind of the way maple is sweet. It was sort of a
maple bacon.
It was sort of a pine sap bacon. It was interesting. I enjoyed it. I ate a couple pieces. I ate all that I brought back. There's a couple pieces that I burnt. So it, and unlike bacon, it actually, it'll start out sort of wrinkled up, and then it'll flatten completely out as you cook it.
The opposite way.
The opposite way, yeah. It flattens completely out. Because it started out all twisty and jumbled up, and then as soon as I put it in the oil, the fibers just tightened up and it stretched out. And then it kind of even remotely looks like bacon, sort of the coloration and the hues and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, not necessarily exactly like bacon. It is tasty, though.
Okay.
It is tasty. It has a wonderful crunch that you can't get in a lot of foods that are, you know, good for you.
Right. And I mean, that crunch is something that people genetically just love. I mean, it lets you know you're eating.
I miss crunch. You know, because on paleo, there's not a lot of crunch.
No, there's not. I mean, because most of the crunchy things that you get, like pretzels, crackers, stuff like that, chips, not paleo.
Yeah. So
not paleo.
So definitely good. I think I ended up with more shares on that, and it's still being shared, you know, the Facebook and whatnot. So check it out. And if you have a pine tree, get you some. Especially if you have to, if you've got to debark a pine tree, save some pine bark.
All right. Now the next part of Nutrition Punk that we're doing is actually going to be tying right into Mike's paleo report, and that's something that, well. Something I basically, I'm feeling the need to talk about, and I want to share with people that might be having a similar experience going paleo. Now, for me, going paleo was a huge lifestyle change. I'm the kind of guy that would buy, that if I had to stop at a grocery store on the way home, I'd buy a box of Twinkies. They come 10 in a box, and by the time I got to my house, the box would be empty. I would buy packs of American cheese and do the same thing with it. I am a man that loves his food and loves his freaking carbs, okay? I mean, and then I went paleo because I wanted to lose weight. I've had some health problems. I want to fix myself. This whole thing that I've been doing this past year is I'm trying to fix my body. I quit smoking this past year. I'd been smoking about 3/4 of a pack a day, about 15 cigarettes a day. I smoke more than a pack a day at my worst, but I quit smoking about 8 months ago. I mean, I've been doing great on that. Awesome. Now I've been doing paleo for about 3 weeks now. I mean, and I've noticed great results. I've noticed more energy. I've noticed weight loss. Heck, everybody's noticed the weight loss.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even my co-host here commented that I'm looking thinner, and I am loving the fact that people have noticed that. But I've been going through something that I was not expecting to go through. I mean, you go into something planning on bettering yourself. And when you see results, you'd think that would make you happy. But it hasn't been making me happy. If anything, this has thrown me into a depression. And from my understanding, that's not an uncommon occurrence. I'm not saying I'm depressed constantly. I'm not. But it's getting to the point that around meal times, I would start getting really grumpy. Sometimes sad, hell, even to the point of crying. Like, James was witness to this. Last weekend, I was on my way home. And I mean, and I was coming home to a steak dinner, okay? That's the one thing about paleo, is I've been eating good. I've been eating meals that people would love to have on a daily basis. I mean, I've been eating more steak and pork chops and pork steaks and fish and all that stuff. And, you know, since I've been doing this and I have my whole freaking life. But my wife asked me to stop at McDonald's to get food for her and the kids on the way home, because they're not paleo. Well, I stopped at McDonald's, and I was at the window, and I was smelling the delicious burger smell coming from that building. And McDonald's sweet tea is one of my favorite drinks on the planet. And my favorite sandwich on the planet is a freaking Big Mac, for God's sake. And I was sitting there at that drive-thru, and I ordered their stuff. And the woman asked me, will that be all? And I just sat there. I didn't respond. Because I was just looking at that menu and smelling these smells. And she's like, is there anything else, sir? And I said, and possibly the most downtrodden voice I've ever used, no, that's it.
Wow.
I pulled up to the window, and I paid. And I damn near said, I'd like to add something to the order. But I didn't. And I got the food, and I sat it next to me in the car, and it was raining that day, so I had the windows up with these smells trapped in the car with me. And by the time I got home, I was in such a bad frickin' mood because I wanted nothing in the world at that moment more than McDonald's. James was waiting for me. We were getting ready to do an interview that hasn't actually published yet. Well, by the time you hear this, you'll have heard the interview with the Survival Mom a week ago. So, but I was to the point of crying. I was really crying. I was so upset and I was angry. And it's not the only time that's happened. That's happened several other times while I've been doing this. Now it's been a little bit better the last couple days, but I realized at that point I'm kind of a carb junkie. I'm kind of a food addict, if such a thing exists.
It absolutely exists.
See, now that's the thing about food addiction that's unlike other addictions. If you're addicted to crack, you stop smoking crack. If you're addicted to alcohol, you stop drinking alcohol. I can't stop eating food.
Well, I like the way that Jimmy Moore put it when we interviewed him, that he figured that he had eaten all the carbs that he needed to eat for the rest of his life, because they were killing him. I'm not saying that you should never eat carbs again, but you are definitely carbohydrate addicted. I mean, that was, I wouldn't necessarily, you did eat sweets, but definitely like grain-based foods, pizza, pastas.
Oh my God. I mean, just eating pastas and pizzas.
Fried foods.
And hamburger helper. I mean, 6 out of 7 nights of the freaking week. Lots of stuff like that. My favorite snack food in the world is pretzels, for God's sake. I mean, hell, I've sat there and ate whole packs of crackers. I'm not talking like packs of like 2 crackers. I'm talking about like the big packs that come 4 to a box of crackers. I'll sit there and eat those with a damn brick of cheese. I mean, God only knows how many bologna sandwiches I've eaten in my life. None of this stuff is paleo. And another, and you were witness to this, when we were on our way back from Chattanooga, we stopped at a Chinese buffet. And I was happy because I was going to stop at a Chinese buffet. I love Chinese buffets. I love Chinese food. And got in there, and I was walking around. They had 6 big buffet tables. And I was walking back and forth between all these things, finding all my favorite shit that I can't eat. I couldn't eat the lo mein. I couldn't eat the crab rangoons. I couldn't even have my orange chicken because they breaded it first.
Yeah.
I mean, one after the other after the other. I mean, I was walking around for a good 10 minutes, and he walks up to me. He's like, "Your plate is suspiciously empty."
And you look like... You look like the angriest son of a bitch ever.
I was hungry.
I'm like, fucking eat.
I was so pissed off and upset because none of the food that I wanted I could have. And there's all this food that honestly I didn't want that I could have because it wasn't the stuff that I've ever gotten at the Chinese restaurant. But I filled my plate full of stuff that I could and sat there and shoveled that crap into my face. Pissed off and hardly talking the whole time. I mean, you were having a drag conversation out of me. I was really, really upset. I mean, and that's happened more than once. I mean, and it's something I'm having to fight through. But, and I'll be honest, at the end of that, I did go to the buffet one more time, and I came back to the plate with one single crab rangoon sitting on it. And I looked at him, and I'm like, 85-15, and ate the damn thing. I figured after everything I've been doing and as good as I was doing, I deserved one crab rangoon. That's the extent of my cheating on this diet.
Yeah.
I've been desperately trying not to cheat on it, and God knows I've wanted to every damn day. But I can't. I just can't. I'm the one making me do this. I would only be cheating myself.
Yeah. When you told me this... I need to consult with some experts, but the first thing that popped in my head was, I don't think you're getting enough fat,
Keep talking, man.
I read some stuff saying you might not be getting enough protein, but I think you are getting enough protein. I think you may be getting more protein than you need. You may need to
I'm still hammering out the,
Right, you're still learning. No, I threw that out of the way on purpose.
Why?
Because we're running long.
What? We're running long? How long are we running?
Oh, God, we're already over an hour?
Yeah. And it's, we gotta wrap this up.
Alright, well, let me do my weekly weigh-in. You keep talking.
I'm thinking more fat, so, you know, avocado, more, coconut oil. I want you to add coconut oil in. More healthy oils.
I gotta find a place to buy coconut oil.
Just get some from Walmart.
They didn't have any when I went.
It's on the same aisle as the other oils. It's in a little white container called Llewellyn's or Luann's or something. That's the stuff to get there. It's cheap, it's good. So maybe more fat, and then maybe add in a fish oil. And get, this may sound weird, but get the most expensive fish oil you can get. Probably go to GNC. Because fish oil, if it's cheap, they skip out on it, and there's no point in wasting your money buying it. You'd be better off that way. And possibly even add in a fish night per week. So go to Walmart to the frozen food section, get a bag of frozen wild caught salmon. I think it's $7 for like several frozen fillets, and then eat that once per week.
Oh, I made fish tacos last night. I made paleo tortillas.
Out of what?
Almond flour.
Nice.
They didn't turn out exactly how I said. Well, I made three. The third one turned out the right flexibility because I overcooked the first two.
Yeah.
And I gotta do something. I gotta change the flavor of it a little bit. I'm gonna have to add some seasoning or something into that. But I got to eat my fish tacos.
Nice. So,
and ladies and gentlemen, what's I just did my weigh-in of the week, and I would like to happily announce. Let's see, my first weigh-in. I announced at the beginning of this. I weighed in at a slim 298 pounds. Then when I did a weigh-in for the show, what did I say it was last time? I was down to, I'd gotten down to, I think, 280, 279, something like that.
Something.
No, it was I think it was 280 or 281. I forget. Look it up. I'm now at 274.
Nice.
Yep. That's at least another 6 pounds off there. So
you can definitely tell.
Yeah. So from where I've begun, I mean, I've lost 24 pounds so far.
Yeah. In three weeks.
That's averaging out at 8 pounds a week. I'm losing more than a pound a day. And that makes me so freaking happy.
I still think you might not be eating enough food.
I'm probably not.
So that may help with some of your depression. Not getting enough calories can actually bring on depression. There are studies where people were lowered down to like 900 calories for life extension experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically, they reported being cold and not sleeping well, having shakes, and being miserably depressed.
The depression is the only thing that I'm really suffering from for that.
So,
because I've actually been sleeping better, and I'm rarely ever cold. I love the cold anyway, so that's not a big thing for me.
So,
but that's Mike's paleo report for this week. I mean, I'm doing great on it, and I'm going to stay the course. I am counting down the days until my cheat day there.
You probably will for the first few months. I don't even care anymore.
I've actually, I did something, I've been doing stuff that I didn't think that I would.
Huh.
I've been removing items from my cheat day list.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because the craving hit me at that point, and I'm like, at this point, I'm like, I don't care about it anymore. I don't want it.
If you...
Don't get me wrong, I've still got like 27 things
on my cheat day list. No. I was going to say, if you stick with it, and I hope you do, a couple months down the line, when you pull up McDonald's to get food for your family or something, the smell will make you nauseous. The smell makes me want to throw up. Because I occasionally go to get coffees there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I get from there?
You get an iced coffee, no sugar, no cream, light ice.
Yes.
If they get the order
no
right.
No cream, no sugar, light ice. Usually they're idiots. But
and they screw it up.
Yes. And it, oh my God, I can't, the whole, they must be making $50. That's it. We're done.
the Dabner went on to a different rant.
Yes. Another sponsor of the day, Mai Tai Coffee.
We've
talked about them thoroughly.
Oh, yeah, and the wild edible for the day is Yaupon Holly.
Oh, God.
Okay, let me read through this really quick. Identification, an erect, slow-growing evergreen shrub or small tree forming
forming dense thickets of about 25 feet tall in some areas, usually much smaller. Many stems, low, dense, rounded crown, thick leaves, simple, alternate, leathery, varying in size and shape from plant to plant, flowers and conspicuous male, female flowers in different trees, bark, thin gray and smooth, toxic red fruit is small, shiny droop. Time of year, evergreen, lives year-round environment, grows best in climates of mild winters and long, hot, humid summers. Method of preparation ranges from steeping a few leaves a few minutes to a hot boiling and elaborate, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yop and holly. Okay, moving on to...
We'll have to talk about that later in depth, because if you... You can, like, you can dry roast the leaves of the Yapon holly and make, I mean, it's caffeinated. It's one of the only caffeinated items here in the United States. There's not really, we can't grow coffee, we can't grow a lot of other stuff. It's hard to grow teas and stuff. So, yeah, we need to wrap up. We're at an hour and a half and we can't.
Alrighty, but Mai Tai coffee, speaking of caffeine.
We've talked about them plenty today. I'm jacked up on Mai Tai coffee. It's good stuff.
Mai Tai Coffee, find the banner on the right-hand side. As well, while you're already there, look for the banner for freedommunitions.com.
The largest direct-to-consumer retailer for ammunition made here in America.
Save hundreds on thousands of rounds.
Yes.
Freedom Munitions, find the banner. All right, and if you want to advertise on SurvivalPunk.com, just contact James at SurvivalPunk.com and set up some kind of a program. We take cash, we take bitcoins, we take barter, we take meat, we take precious metals, James at SurvivalPunk.com. And speaking of Survival Punk, if you want to be part of an army and you don't want to wear green khakis, the Survival Punk Army wants you!
Yes, get exclusive discounts to 12 vendors, including Mai Tai Coffee, ebooks, exclusive content. There should be a video up there by the time that you listen to this.
Mm-hmm. Discounts ranging from 10 to 20% at several vendors.
Yes, discounts, exclusive content, good stuff there. Consider joining it. $50 a year, $5 a month. We appreciate your support.
Survival Punk Army. All right, and this week I'm going to be inviting Ray Mears onto the show. That's my celebrity invite of the week.
You don't even know Ray Mears.
I looked him up. Yeah, I wanted Ray Mears to come on the show. Ray Mears, if you're listening, and I know you are, you have an open door invite onto the show. Ray Mears. All right, well, it has been a great show, and now I'm talking like I'm the one that's been drinking all the coffee.
Yes, I'm hyped.
Yes, absolutely. So, for Survival Punk Podcast, this is CPS Mike.
And this is James from SurvivalPunk.com reminding you, DIY to survive.
I have to do my advice first, you jackass. Yeah, in a crisis, give help first, advice later. DIY to survive. Booyah.
Coffee!